The following program was produced by an independent community producer. The opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect those of the ECAT staff or board of directors.
There's a girl, she's a star. She's got style. Steffi Star, you see her face around the town. She's popular. Steffi Star.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Weinstein.
What's
so funny about my name?
Laughing
at my puffsleeve?
No, I'm loving it.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Adorable.
Yes.
I got it off the World Wide Web.
Nice.
Yeah.
Love it.
So we're real estate agents with a podcast.
Yes. The show with Weinstein Keach.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We have a very exciting guest today.
Yeah. Wait, you didn't sleep last night, right?
No.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Yeah.
Yeah, we think it's the moon.
Yeah.
But enough about that. Let's move on to our fabulous guest today. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi. Yes. So I am Brittany Slater. I am a licensed marriage and sex therapist, and I live in Easton.
Wow.
So I'm
now,
local.
We had no idea that Brittany lived in Easton.
Yeah.
And Brittany, tell Meredith the story of how you didn't even know where Easton was. Because Meredith says the sun rises and sets on Easton.
It is the center of the universe.
Right. And Brittany said, I never even knew where Easton was.
But now she does. So, I mean, she moved here. There you go.
Now I do. And now I know what an offense it is to say that. Because since I've lived in Easton, I understand like why everybody's obsessed with it. No, my husband and I, it was the pandemic had hit and we had been living in Randolph and we had been growing out of our house. So we weren't even seriously looking, but there was just one night he saw this house and he was like, oh my gosh, Brittany, look at this house. It's amazing. And it kind of checked every item on our bucket list that we had. I said, oh my gosh, we have to go see it. And we Googled it and it said Easton. And I said, where the heck is Easton? I've never even heard of this town. And we're driving here. And I'm like, it's so quaint. There's like a breakfast spot and a yoga studio. Where are we right now?
I love it.
I was like, this is amazing. So we didn't even know where it was. We just really liked the house and ended up kind of falling in love with it. And moved here in December 2020. And I was laughing because everybody I've met here says, oh, did you grow up in Easton? And I say, no. Did you? And they say, yes. And my parents grew up here and my grandparents grew up here. So,
yeah.
That's like Meredith.
Cult-like following.
Yeah, yeah. Every person over the age of 90 knows Meredith's family. Everyone knows Meredith's family. All you have to say is Keach. And they're like, oh, know Meredith.
Yeah. It's pretty neat to come back to a place where I grew up. You know, my dad grew up. My grandparents were here. And there are families here that have gone generations longer than ours too, which is pretty neat.
Yeah. Yeah. I love
but
it.
It's getting so expensive. People have to move out. Mm-hmm. So that's the other thing.
Yeah. It's cool. It's kind of nice for a suburban town though. I feel like a lot of nice restaurants and cool stuff to do, which.
Yeah.
There are so many good restaurants here.
Yeah.
What's your favorite restaurant in Easton?
Oh, gosh, that is
hard.
Have
you been to Gianni yet?
I haven't been there, no. I keep dropping hints to my husband that I really want to go there. So,
Oh, by the way, we're going tonight at 5.
Okay.
Oh, you're going tonight?
I have hockey, I think.
You can't go?
I don't know.
We'll talk. Oh, it's with Joe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Forgot about that.
Okay. Probably La Cucina. I've been there, I don't know, 100 times since I moved here, probably.
Oh, yeah. Great restaurant.
A great decor in there, too.
Oh, I love
awesome
it.
Bar.
Yeah, it's so cool. I love it in there.
Yeah, it's good. Remember the Marcus event with the gigantic charcuterie?
Yep.
So they had a big fundraiser for Crohn's Colitis Foundation of America, mm-hmm. whatever year, and they changed the venue. But when you walk in, you know, you have the host stand in the front. And then the section immediately behind them is a big open room that used to be the cathedral for the church that was there. Mm-hmm. And that room, they took one gigantic table, and that's a big, huge room.
Yeah.
And made it one gigantic charcuterie. It was so impressive.
Oh, that's so cool.
Do you remember it?
No.
Not really. Yeah, it was pretty
spectacular. I don't think I went to that one.
You did.
I did?
Mm-hmm.
Am I having a memory block?
We had a good picture there.
We
Mine
did?
Mine looked good, and you made me cut you out because didn't like you in it.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, we're talking too much about Easton. We're getting into real estate
stuff. And we have,
I get it. I get
right,
it.
We have awesome. People all over the world listening to us.
Yes,
so we don't. Like
I did
to
announce
keep it.
This morning that we were going to have a sex therapist, which is so exciting.
Yeah, did anybody write anything? Or
no,
they were too
everybody
nervous?
Get nervous. You probably get that, do you?
I do, yeah. I have a lot of people that will ask anonymous questions, but they're like, please do not in any way, shape, or form tell anybody that I asked you this.
Yeah.
But it's actually funny. Speaking of La Cucina, there's been quite a few times I've been down there and at the bar and people find out I'm a sex therapist and all the crazy questions start coming out.
I bet. Yeah. Yeah, especially after a couple drinks, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Interesting questions after 11 p.m. So
we had some ladies in on another podcast actually this week that they own medical aesthetics. So fillers, mm-hmm. Botox, all types of treatments. And mm-hmm. we asked them if they're basically secret celebrities. And they said, yes. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants anybody to know that they're having work done, except for Stephanie and me. We're pretty right. open with what we do. But
yeah,
everybody wants it. And so here it is, too. So how does it work to work with you? And walk us through that.
Yeah, sure. So in terms of working with me right now, I have a private practice that's been pretty full for a while. I'm sure you guys can imagine once the pandemic hit, you know, everybody stuck at home with their spouse. So pretty much everyone wanted marriage counseling, couples counseling.
Right.
So I have a private practice right now. I see mostly individuals and couples together. But because the practice got so saturated, I also offer online seminars for couples, which was kind of interesting. It was sort of during the pandemic, I was just getting so many referrals and I felt horrible because so many people were saying, you know, do you know anyone that you could refer me to? Is anyone taking clients? And everyone I knew was in the same position as me, super full. And honestly, working with me, I tell a lot of people, there's a very similar treatment program that I give. Most of my couples tend to fall into certain categories where it's, you know, okay, if you're having this problem, you need this skill set. If you're having this issue, use these kind of tools. So actually during the pandemic, I just started creating some online seminars just as a way to, I didn't really expect anything to come from it. It was more just a way to give people something. Hey, if you can't work with me, you can at least take my online seminar and give you something to hold you over. And those actually ended up working out really well for a lot of people. So I started kind of investing a little bit more time and energy into those. And so now I offer both of those. So yeah.
How does that work? How do you sign up for your seminar?
So just right on my website, it's like an online seminar that you can go. You can purchase the seminar. And once you purchase it, you get instant access to the online videos. So it's essentially a course outline where I go through, you know, different modules of common issues that couples will experience. So for example, I have a general couples one. It's called Couples Connected. And I go over things like communication, conflict management, romance and intimacy. That's always a big one for people. And then just general strengthening your relationship and go through why certain patterns tend to happen for couples. Again, you know, I tell everybody, one of the biggest things I see for couples, and they always say, oh, we must be the only people that experience this, or, you know, we must be the most, you know, messed up couple you've ever seen. I say, no, trust me, I see people like you all the time. So I'll go through kind of why those patterns happen, some of the psychoeducation behind it. And then my seminars also come with a workbook that give you exercises and tools to kind of work through on a weekly basis together so that you can practice those skills that are discussed in the video. So kind of explaining why unhealthy patterns happen and then what you can do to engage in more healthy patterns with each other.
And tell our audience what your website is.
Speakteasy.com. I was going to say, sorry, I was going to say
Speakteasy. Yeah, I was looking at it and I'm like, there's got to be a backstory on Speakteasy.
There is a backstory. So it actually started, how I got into this, it started out in college. I was just always really interested in sex education and things like that. And so I kind of started out as just doing fun educational seminars for my girlfriends and then for some bachelorette parties around sex and like spicing things up. But I always thought it was really interesting because at my college, I don't know how to say this. I guess I was kind of like known for being the person that was always talking about sex. So I would be, I would put on, you know, there were different programming through our women's center and it talked about healthy relationships and sexual intimacy and things like that. So I was always the one talking about it. And I noticed a lot of other people like to talk about it too, but kind of like what we were just saying, everybody's so secretive about it, right?
Yes.
And everybody wants to know about it. Everybody wants to talk about it, but everybody's so embarrassed and thinks it should be this hidden thing.
Right.
And so I always thought of speakeasies where, and I love that, or I love 1930s and I love anything to do with that. But I always thought it was really interesting how, you know, during Prohibition, alcohol was outlawed. And what happened? Everybody in the world started going to these speakeasies and partaking in it. So speakeasy is kind of a twist on that concept.
Love it.
Adorable. Yeah. Absolutely adorable.
Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
And Stephanie indicated that you're renovating your website.
Yes, I am currently renovating my website because I started this out when I was, I think, about 21 years old. I had no idea what I was doing. So I did the website myself. So some of the platforms I was using are unsupported now. So I'm currently in the process of redesigning. So the website looks a little funky right now, but it's still very much functional.
Good. Yeah. And then so you have a professional who you've hired to renovate your website. And then or is renovate the right word? That's like a real estate term.
Yeah, but that's redesign.
Maybe. Redesign.
Renovate. Yeah. I think renovate sounds good. Yeah. Renovate sounds good.
I relate to renovate.
And so you'll still be able to access your seminar there?
Yes. Yep. Everything's still fully functional and people can contact me through there. I also have an Instagram. It's SpeakTZMA. That people submit questions to, and I kind of go over again a lot of general relationship topics that I kind of whatever is coming up in session, I'll just do reels or funny videos. I'm, you know, just kind of answering those type of topics.
Is that where you do your videos?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. That's right. Yeah, it is. It's a lot of work.
It's a lot.
It's so hard.
Yeah. Stephanie and I, we are supposed to be doing videos, but we do a lot too.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
You got a podcast sometimes multiple times a week.
Right.
We've got clients and a team, and sometimes you can only handle so much. I mean, you've got a full schedule for therapy, right? So, you know, you've only got so much time to middle of the night, I guess. If we don't sleep, we should be doing business.
We might as well just get up.
Yeah. Sometimes if you work with me, you will get an email at 2 a.m., but.
Right. That's the way it goes. I tell people,
we do the
pay
same.
No attention. Pay right. No attention to the timestamp, please.
Yes.
And
right.
Don't comment on it. Don't mention it.
Yes.
It is what it is. If you notice it, fine.
Yeah.
Right.
Right?
Right.
All right. So let's get to the nitty gritty because everybody wants to hear about sex.
Yes. Yes.
So give us some examples of some of the questions that you have. I'm not even sure where to ask. Some of the types of questions that you field. How do you help people in these intimate moments? And how do you work with two people? I'm sure you work with all varieties of couples, right? Mm-hmm. Men, women, 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 men, men.
They.
Mm-hmm. God knows what, you know, we have going
furry,
on.
Furry.
Furries, right?
Yes, yes. Oh my gosh, yes. I actually have worked with furry. So I do specialize in the kink community. So that is also something that I see quite frequently, which I personally love because there's always new terms and dynamics coming out that I have to constantly be learning about.
Right.
So it is funny. I always tell people, because again, people always come to me and they say, oh, I don't want to gross you out or I don't want to shock you. And I always joke to people, I say, trust me, if you say anything I haven't heard before, I will give you a high five.
Yeah.
It has happened once or twice where I'm like, wow, okay, that earned a high five. But
really?
Yeah, those are always interesting.
Ow.
Yeah.
Can I just interject? You
yeah.
said in the kink community. So I went to UMass and we would get these.
Did you say kink?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Kink.
That's like the funky stuff.
Kink?
Kink, yeah.
Or
kink. K-I-N-K.
Yeah. Kink.
Yeah. Yeah. If anybody wants to Google it.
Yeah.
I might have to.
So I went to UMass and I would get these.
Dartmouth or Amherst.
Amherst. Brochures type. Mm-hmm. About going and dressing up and as like wizards or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it would kind of neat. It would be like people dressing up like and going, you know, in the fake battles.
Mm-hmm.
But now I learned that that was actually a sexual thing.
It was.
Yes.
And I'm glad I didn't go because I would have been.
I wish
I didn't
went.
Know.
Why didn't you go? Why didn't
been
you
like,
go?
Wow, I didn't know this. Maybe I should have. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's actually a great point. And this is something I tell everybody. So whenever people think of kink and they hear of like kink parties, actually, it's funny. Fantasy kink was, I think, you know, like anything else, things have trends. And fantasy kink was definitely one of those trends a couple of years ago. Furries has been a trend, not as popular now. But it's really funny because when you go to these events, a lot of times people do, they just think it's going to be these crazy, you know, people doing insane things in front of each other. And, you know, you're going to be pressured into all these crazy situations. And a lot of the times when you go to these events, a lot of it is really about respect and about boundaries and consent, which I, you know, personally really love because, you know, I tell people, hey, if you're interested in things like this, you know, if you go to an event, you know, sometimes they're hosted by different clubs or different bars. There's online avenues you can go through to find some of these parties or events. You know, even if you're someone who's not really into it or you don't know if you're into it, if you just go there to explore, a lot of people kind of are just more on the end of, you know, hey, if you're at the beginning stages where you just want to come check this out and meet people who do this, that's totally fine. And you're not going to be pressured to do anything. And then there's the other end of the spectrum where it's, hey, if this is your thing and this is what gets you going, you know, this is the place for you. So that's always interesting.
Steph?
I feel really uncomfortable during this podcast. I don't know what to say.
I'm not surprised. Every time we do this, you
I clam up.
Yes.
I don't understand what's wrong with me.
So Stephanie might not talk for the rest of the episode.
That's okay.
Which is like, I never do that.
Yes,
but
you
do. I do.
Yes.
When it comes to this stuff. Oh my God. I think it's the way I grew up.
Yes.
Yeah, probably.
Right? We never talked about any of that.
Mm-hmm. No.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't even know what the kink community is. What is that if you go to an event, a kink event?
Yeah, so kink is just kind of a catch-all term for anything that you would say is out of, you know, quote-unquote normal, or I don't even like to use the word normal, but I would say, you know, outside of traditionally what you think of with sexual intimacy. So typically we think of, you know, sex as between, you know, a man and a woman. That's obviously expanded in the past couple decades. But just, you know, no add-ons, what we, you know, no toys, no fantasy play, role play. So, I mean, you know, kink is kind of just really a catch-all for anything that's beyond just vanilla type intimacy. So, and but I always tell people something something that's really important for me too is, you know, I think in more recent times, you know, quote unquote vanilla sex has also gotten a bad rap. And I say, hey, if that's your jam, right? If you like having sex with one partner in one position and it's the same thing every single time, but that makes you happy, that's totally great too. So I think, you know, sometimes even as a sex therapist, people think, oh, you're going to judge me if I am uncomfortable or if I just like to have, you know, boring sex. And I'm like, you know, sex is like pizza. There's no such thing as boring sex. So
I like it. I like pizza.
Yeah.
Well, I would imagine that your comfort, you indicated that from early on that you were comfortable communicating about sex and all the different types of consensual sex. Mm-hmm. And so that in and of itself breaks down a barrier for people because you're open to discussion, you're aware of it, you're aware of the history. Mm-hmm. And so that's helpful for people coming to you to just have a conversation. Now, do you talk with both couple at the same time? Do you do therapy just one-on-one? Or how does it work? So somebody comes to you and...
Mm-hmm. Sure, depending on the situation. So if it's a couple experiencing relationship issues, I usually like to work with them together just so I can get more of a sense of their dynamic together. I do a lot of what's called emotion-focused couples therapy, which is a... research-based type of therapy, and it deals a lot with attachment styles, you know, kind of how you interact with your partner. So I like to see that kind of dynamic playing out in session. You know, but that being said, every once in a while, I'll get somebody who says, you know, I'm having this relationship issue and my partner is not into therapy, not willing to come to therapy, and I'm happy to work with those people individually. And then sometimes I have people just come for, you know, general issues. They're not necessarily partnered right now, but they want to work on, you know, things in their past related to sex. I mean, again, just, you know, that's also a very common thing I see is people who say, I'm just really uncomfortable talking about intimacy and it's a big hindrance in my life. I can't talk to my partner. I can't talk to my friends. You know, maybe grew up in kind of more of a, you know, restricted environment or an environment where it just wasn't an open topic. So that's also something I see a lot of individuals for.
So in those situations of, let's say, people who have difficulty talking about it.
Why are you looking at me?
It's very common. It's very, very common.
What's your advice? How do you help people feel more comfortable?
Yeah. So, I mean, I would say, you know, I'll give you the long answer and the short answer. The long answer is I usually like to kind of delve into really where that comes from. So we go through what's called a psychosocial assessment where I'll go through and say, okay, what are your earliest memories of seeing your caregivers interact? And what did, you know, what kind of signs of affection did you see from them as a child growing up? How did you first start learning about intimacy? What were you learning about with your body? As you entered puberty, where did you learn about sex from? And we kind of go through all of that. And usually that's where we tend to start to see where some of the barriers to feeling comfortable about it come in. You know, again, a lot of times it'll be, you know, I was told that if you know, I had these urges, I was bad, or, you know, maybe, you know, again, we all have those, or most of us have those embarrassing puberty moments where, you know, something happens and we're, you know, feel a lot of shame and a lot of embarrassment, which can be really common. And, you know, we learn a lot of lessons from that. So we'll sort of work through that to kind of say, okay, where are those areas of shame? Where are those areas where you feel kind of restricted? And sort of work through that. But in the short term, you know, I do tell people that it's okay to be uncomfortable, and kind of like anything else with it, sometimes just finding the edge of where your comfort level is, and you don't have to step wildly over that, right? Like if someone's uncomfortable talking about sex, I'd probably say, you know, don't go to a furry party if you want to get more comfortable with this, but maybe open up to a close girlfriend, or, you know, even to your partner or your spouse, maybe do some, you know, kind of light, you know, one of the techniques I even say for people who are really uncomfortable talking about sex, I say, okay, well, what kind of movies or shows do you like? Is there any movie or show that has a romantic scene? It doesn't even have to be sexual. It could be romantic. And do you enjoy watching that and kind of talking about that? What do you enjoy about it? Do you enjoy their relationship dynamic? Do you enjoy how they're kissing? And so a lot of it is also just kind of finding those edges of the comfort zone and then saying, okay, how do we push a little bit past there? And ultimately to get you to the point where you want to be, you know, that's a big question too. How comfortable do you want to be talking about intimacy?
Well, it's definitely a taboo subject, as yes. It's been for in our culture for a long time. I think today it's a lot more mm-hmm. open, especially with the internet, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Definitely. And it's reworking a lot of that, those shame narratives, like knowing it's okay to talk about these things. And
I mean, I wasn't allowed to date or talk to boys.
Yeah.
Yes. So that would be
tough. I grew up with a Greek father.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I had a lot of friends who were Greek. So.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
So there's that.
Yeah.
But, you know, something I noticed, I went to a Vegas pool party recently.
Mm-hmm.
And I was impressed with the women and their comfort level with their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I recognize that it was a Vegas pool party, meaning like it could have been a furry party, right? Like everybody goes, you know, except me. I was there in my blazer.
Yeah. But I was like, you have to go.
They wouldn't go. But I wanted to go and see it. It looked like just a raucous, awesome party. Mm-hmm. And it was. But the women were just so comfortable with their bodies. And that, to me, seemed different than when I was their age,
mm-hmm.
which I'm not sure if that's factual or if it's just what I saw in this one particular environment that was people going there knew what they were, other than me, mm-hmm. knew what they were going to experience. But is that something that you see that younger generations, women, are more comfortable with themselves?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, honestly, I see a mix of both, definitely. I would say I definitely have more people that I think are becoming a little bit more sexually liberated. They're starting to open up their horizons and realize, you know, okay, maybe these things I was told as an adolescent or these things I've believed my whole life, you know, it's okay to kind of challenge those beliefs and, you know, have some comfortability just exploring them, right? So I definitely, and I would say I see a little bit of an older population. So I have a couple I have a couple of my Gen Z clients who I love to learn all the slang from, and they make me feel really old all the time, my young 20s. But I do tend to see people who are in their, you know, 30s and up. They tend to be more of the people who are in the committed relationships that come to couples therapy. So I would say I definitely see a blend of both, though. Some people who are really sexually liberated, but then, as always, I see a lot of, actually, one of the trends I've seen, I used to see a lot of women who would struggle with insecurities about their bodies and how they look, and that played into their sexual dynamic. But it's actually becoming more and more common for me to see men coming to me with those issues, men coming to me older on in life, you know, even as young as, you know, I would say, you know, late 20s, early 30s, coming to me and saying, hey, I'm not performing as well as I was when I was younger. What's going on? I'm slowing down. I'm feeling less masculine. So that's actually a big trend I see as well.
Huh. Good for them for coming to you.
Yeah, right?
Yes.
That's brave.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we as Americans are so uptight about sex, right?
Yes.
Well, it's not like this in Europe.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? They're running around topless. They don't care. Love is love.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
we are just uptight.
Yes, yeah, which is a big hindrance I see. And like it, even just exploring like those masculine and feminine ideals, which is interesting.
I mean, in college, I was free.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I dressed like those girls at the pool party.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You should have seen what I wore. Please, my body was hot.
Mm, yeah.
Your body's still hot, though, yeah. Right?
Oh, you're so cute. Yeah. Thanks.
No, it
oh,
is.
Thank you.
No, seriously, you look phenomenal. Yes. Yeah.
Thanks. So what's the most common problem that couples, like middle-aged couples, come with to you?
Yes, great question. So most common issue is just that the sex has become infrequent and boring. Mm. So kind of, you know, they say, you know, when we're having sex, it's kind of done the same way every single time. You know, there's no spontaneity to it. There's not a lot of flirting left in the relationship. Very common dynamic for it to be one partner who really wants it and really wants to bring it back and kind of have those, you know, heydays of, you know, when we were first married, and the other person's like, ugh, like we've been married for 15 years. We're over that now. We don't need to be doing that anymore. So that is probably the, you know, number one by far most common dynamic I see between couples.
So what's your advice?
Love that. So I always say keep dating. I always find it so interesting when couples just, I always thought the narrative of, you know, a relationship spark fades over time, that just being the norm. I always thought that was so odd to me, because I would think, you know, even if it's the norm, why are we accepting that as the norm? Like, why would you want to be in a relationship that's amazing and passionate at the beginning, but 10 years in, it's just, oh, that's normal. That's just gone. One of the things I tell couples is that, you know, spontaneity and creativity, those are going to be your two best friends for spicing up your relationship. So again, kind of going back to what we talked about at the beginning, with a sex therapist, people sometimes are afraid to come to me because they're like, if I go to you and I want to talk about spicing up my sex life, you're going to start telling me to, you know, tie each other up and start getting all these toys and going crazy. And I'm like, hey, if that's your thing and that's what you're interested in, sure, we can go there and we can talk about that. But a lot of times I'll just tell couples, when's the last time you went on a date? And when's the last time you went on a date that wasn't, you know, we went to the same old restaurant that we've been to 100 times and we sat there on our phones, or we only talked about work and, you know, kids. And not that those can't be good topics, but you know, we kind of talked about the same thing we talk about throughout the week. And then we went home and, you know, maybe had sex in the missionary position like we do every single time. So one of the big things I say is, you know, go on a date and make it really creative, you know, do something you've never done with each other, do something exciting, you know, take a class together, something that really challenges you both. And then experimenting with different types of affection, you know, how affectionate are you with each other throughout the week? Are you walking by and kind of slapping each other on the bum, or are you, you know, giving each other a hug? And I know it might be hard. It's like, oh, and
sorry, yeah. I'm picturing you in shock.
Oh, yeah, we've been married for a long time.
Yeah.
Or all my married friends.
Yes.
Yeah. So one caveat to that too, and I hear this more from the women whenever I say, you know, when's the last time you've been flirting with each other? Like walk by and slap each other on the bum. And I get a lot of women who are like, oh, I would punch my husband in the face if he just walked by and slapped me on the bum.
I wouldn't mind that.
You wouldn't mind that? No, that'd be good.
Yeah. Well,
you're in a great stage.
Right.
I mean,
I'm divorced.
Mm-hmm. Divorced, but not just divorced. Like, your children are adults.
I'm an empty nester, divorced.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so there wasn't
with a live-in boyfriend.
Yes.
Yeah. And you don't have great baggage. Situation. Your ex, no. You have a wonderful relationship with him.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And
we don't have to deal with children issues every day.
No.
And right.
Mm-hmm. So you're free.
Yes. And that can be a really great time to really experiment with yourself, right? Get to know yourself. And like you said, if you have a little less pressure of life, you can have, you know, less stress with the kids and
right. You
can have a little more time to explore and, you know, kind of maybe get to know what you like maybe when you couldn't when you were younger, right? Not to push too much.
Can we move on, please? So people need to add spice to their life.
Yeah.
Spice. Right? Yes.
They need to flirt. Mm-hmm. They need to date. Mm. They need to go to different places.
Yes. Flirt, date. But one other thing I also say is, you know, what's your emotional connection look like? So I see this a lot as well, where as much as I'm like, you have to spice things up from the physical side, it's also really important to have the emotional side of things. So, you know, if you're, you know, with your partner every day and you feel like they're not really connected to you, you know, maybe you're talking about work or you're talking about your stress levels, you know, things that have happened with the kids, and you feel like your partner's just disinterested. They're not really hearing you out with what you're saying, or you guys are arguing frequently. you know, or maybe just kind of feel like they're not as motivated in life, like they're not, you know, kind of pushing themselves to be the best version that they can be. I'll see a lot of couples kind of start to, you know, go into these zones of feeling very comfortable in their lives. But, you know, and that can be a good thing in a lot of ways, but it can also decrease passion in a lot of ways. So that's another big thing I work with on couples is, what does your emotional connection look like with each other?
So you talked about a lot of people coming to you from the pandemic, mm-hmm. the lockdown period.
Mm-hmm.
What did that look like for couples?
I'll tell you what it looked like for real estate agents. Yes. They wanted bigger houses.
Yes.
Yes.
That's for sure.
Yes. Yeah, and bigger yards, yes. Pimped out yards,
mm-hmm. right.
Better mm-hmm. places.
Yes, yes. Kind of, I know my husband dragged me kicking and screaming out of the city, but I eventually agreed because we needed a bigger house. So from the pandemic, it was really interesting because I noticed that the couples that had a good, maybe they were having some relationship issues like general communication or they were arguing, but generally in a good spot in terms of their friendship dynamic. So, you know, the couples that would argue, but they said, you know, we still really respect one another. We want the best for one another. Those couples actually really thrived during the pandemic, like some of them more so than I'd been working with a few of these couples for a year or two. And the pandemic actually brought them a lot closer together. You know, they kind of were forced into this teamwork mentality, whether it was juggling working from home or things with kids. And so my couples that had that really good friendship foundation, actually, I think the pandemic kind of forced them. It was almost like a boot camp for their relationship. And they actually did a lot better because of the pandemic. And I saw a lot of people, like, their priorities shifted as well, you know, in terms of maybe work becoming a little less important for them, or, you know, being in the office every day and, you know, wanting to spend more time with kids, wanting to spend more time with family. And then, unfortunately, I did have a few couples who, when they were kind of forced to be home together 24/7 and they weren't getting those social interactions, there was a lot, you know, that happened in terms of a lot of people got depressed, a lot of people got anxious. It was really common for people to start, you know, kind of using more and more coping mechanisms that weren't exactly healthy, like, you know, drinking a lot at night or using substances to kind of cope with the stress, which, you know, I think was
normal.
Is that
bad?
I think it was normal for a lot of people. You know, I don't think it was right. I don't think it was necessarily bad. Right. You know, right. I was even there myself. There were a couple nights where I was, you know, definitely just like went to pour myself a glass of wine. And, you know, to the point where I'm like, what am I doing? Why am I drinking wine on a Wednesday? Like, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yes, you could.
Yeah.
I was like, we went through so much box wine.
Yeah, we went through a lot of wine. One time I took out my recycling and I was like, ooh, Brittany, maybe you should look at this. Yeah, so which I don't think was in and of itself a problem, but yeah, so those, you know, the couples I saw that maybe were already having some issues in their friendship foundation, you know, weren't as connected. They kind of went their separate ways in terms of their coping skills, and you know, the pandemic had a negative effect on them, unfortunately.
I would imagine, and tell me if I'm wrong, but is it the majority of the time when a couple comes to you, one has an issue and the other doesn't?
That's a good, what do you mean with where one has an issue?
So one might be thinking we're not intimate enough, or one mm-hmm. might be thinking one thing and then sort of drags the other one to therapy. I can't imagine that both come to you saying, yes, we are not intimate together. Because if you had that, then you would be able to fix that.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I see what you're saying. Yes, that is super common. A lot of people, one person kind of driving the therapy and, you know, kind of reluctantly dragging the other person in, who's kind of like, I don't know why this, you know, or a lot of times they'll acknowledge like, yes, it's a problem, but it's not that big of a deal. So it'll be like, okay, yeah, sure. We haven't had sex in a year, but, you know, we just had a baby and, you know, what's the issue? Or I've been really stressed at work. And so that's a super common dynamic, which is really funny because more often than not, sometimes when I'll work with those couples, it will then be, once we kind of get through those initial symptoms and they start to get a little bit better, a lot of times it's the partner who was initially resistant that are the ones that are like, we have to meet with Brittany this
right.
week. Like, what do you mean you can't schedule me this week? So I always think that's funny when I'm like, remember that time you didn't want to be here and now you want to come every week?
I mean, I think it's important.
Mm.
Right? What? That more couples should be going to counseling. Marriage is so hard.
It's so hard.
And it's just hard to navigate day after day, year after year.
Yeah.
And I just think it's so important to be able to talk to somebody, even if it's once a month.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's check in with each other. Yeah. You know, what's going on with us?
Yeah.
You know, what kind of tips can you give us?
Yeah.
So I think it's important.
Yeah, we did it when we were going through IVF. They required us to because of the pressure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think I really did much. No. I'll be honest.
Jason and I had to go to therapy, you know, because we were getting separated and it was a whole thing and we were trying to save the marriage and we were working on it. And then I went to a therapist and, you know, she looked at me and she goes, "When's the last time you tickled his back?"
Oh.
I said, "I'm out of here."
Well, right, like how receptive.
I feel like that might not be your thing, right? Right. Like, never.
How receptive. And I think, you know, the one thinking one thing and another thinking something else, something very small, what we were told when we go out to dinner, don't sit at the bar. Mm. Sit at a table across from each other, ask each other questions.
What?
And that's fine.
I'm not interested in that.
But sometimes there's, you know, I noticed in our relationship from the lockdown period, we used to sit outside on, let's say, Friday night with a fire pit. Mm-hmm. Very common for us pre-pandemic. And it was a nice time to reconnect.
Yes.
I don't need to reconnect with my husband anymore. I see him every day, almost all day. He's home now. Thankfully, he's out 2 days a week. I think it's wonderful for him because he's a social, he's an introvert. Mm-hmm. So it's very comfortable for him.
Yeah.
But when you see someone so much, that's a difficult, which you saw during the lockdown period, right? And so it is difficult to sort of refresh, that's right. renew.
That's a good point because before the pandemic, you know, everyone's, most spouses were headed to work.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And so it was nice.
Yes.
Because you saw them, you know, at night and then you could talk about your day and it was just different. Mm-hmm. But when they're home all day, every day.
Yeah.
Oh, it was
that
so
That just
hard.
Adds, but after the pandemic now, a lot of people aren't going back to work.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
that's a lot. And it's a lot.
Well, they absence makes the heart grow fonder.
Well, right. So when you see someone day in and day out.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we went through that actually. And it's funny. I always tell people, I like to be really real with people. I'm like, hey, a lot of the skills and the tools I give you, I use in my own marriage because marriage is hard. And I'm like, I'm a marriage counselor. I'm supposed to know how to do this. Mm. And I, you know, I mean, I'm married with two young kids. And so I get it. I'm like, this is difficult. And we experienced that during the pandemic too. We were, you know, kind of home 24/7 in the first 2 weeks when it was still a novelty. We didn't know this was going to be the next couple of years of our life. We were like, oh, this is great. We're going to spend so much time together. And then I think it was maybe a month or two in, we were like, oh my gosh, we are sick of each other.
Right.
I'm like, you need to get away from me. I have been around you 24/7.
Right.
And it's interesting. We were both working from home for a couple of years. And one of the things that actually really helped us, I started saying, okay, we need to create intentional time away from each other and then intentional time together. I think
that's
good. Yeah, it was a couple weeks into the pandemic and I said to my husband, you know, you need to take me on a date. And he looked at me like I was totally insane. He's like, Brittany, the world is shut down. How am I supposed to take you on a date? And I said, you know, be creative. Like, I want you to come up with something at home and do something really cute. And he did. He ended up buying me this like online dance class that we did together. But it was really sweet. We took kind of the whole day apart. You know, just different sections of the house at that point, which was very tiny. But, you know, tried to create that intentional space between each other. And then we would have, you know, sort of times where we would try to come back together and do something fun so that it wasn't, you know, the time together felt like it was quality, not just time spent together. So that was, but that was a big challenge.
Yeah, big challenge. Well, I see them with work. Sometimes I don't call you because I don't want to be annoying because I might have seen you already during the day. Mm-hmm. You do that with me.
Well, can you not call me before 7?
No.
You're up at 2 a.m. You got to get your board.
I call it.
She's like, hey, got a minute? No, I really don't, right? I want to wake up and have my coffee.
Yeah.
I can't talk before 7.
I mean, but that respect for space, I think, also goes beyond. It goes in friendships, work relationships.
Yeah.
You know, you can overdo with people. And you might not even know. I mean, I remember going through a period in my life and talking to a girlfriend constantly about whatever. I don't even remember what the issue was. But she said, I think it's time for you for therapy.
Yeah.
Right. And mm-hmm. you realize that she was drawing that line and said, oh, God, I was trying to use my friend as a therapist.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And
which we do.
We do. Right. Right. Yeah. And I, you know, respected that immediately when I signed up for a therapist. But and then, you know, that gives you that space. But so I think that that carries over as well.
Sure.
You know, beyond just your spouse. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Why have friends ever come to therapy?
My friends? No. Do they use me as their therapy?
Meredith, it's time for our therapy session.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I feel my friends are great. They're always really respectful. They're always like, we don't want to, you know, we know you do this for a living. And I'm like, girl, you know, I love talking about this stuff. It's totally fine. And I have quite a few guy friends too that I'll chat with. And everybody's great. They're all really respectful of. They don't want to, you know, use me as their therapist.
Right.
You guys do, but I like it, so it's okay. But no, I've never had a friend, you know, come to therapy. I think per HIPAA, I'm actually not allowed to do that. I've never tried, but
yeah, but it probably happens over a glass of wine, I would think.
Oh gosh, yeah, definitely.
People, I mean, our friends ask us real estate all the time. It's
right.
That's our passion. That's
right.
What
we love
do.
It.
I would never say I don't want to talk about this.
Yes.
I don't want to talk about my work. I mean, right. I suppose. If a friend is also a client of mine,
yeah,
I avoid them during party time or drinks or whatever because it's so stressful for them, more so, mm-hmm. and they're going to want to just talk about it, and then it's exhausting for them too. So
yeah. I know. I have to tell my friend. I'm always like, guys, if I'm talking about, you know, sex and relationships too much, tell me to back off. But usually, no, we want to hear more.
So when you say you talk about sex, mm-hmm. how do you talk about sex? What do you mean by that?
So with my girlfriends and the guy friends that I have, a lot of times it'll just be talking about their relationships, you know, she did this the other day and, you know, it's driving me crazy, or, you know, he did this and, you know, I want him to be more of this way or that way. So, you know, just kind of talking about, you know, different interactions and, you know, just kind of playing around with a lot of times I'll say, oh, you know, kind of devil's advocate, you know, here's why, you know, I've seen clients in the past I've had, maybe, you know, have you asked him about this, or have you asked her, does she like this? So a lot of times it'll be, and a lot of my friends just like to talk about spicing things up, you know, what are the new toys on the market? And
right.
Have you done the double vanilla swirl?
He's like, what's a double vanilla swirl? I've never heard of that.
She's making it up.
Really, Brittany? You don't know?
I was like, can I give you a high five right now? Because I've never heard of that. I love that.
All right. So in product, right? So the mm-hmm. other day we had the ladies from Medical Aesthetics come in. They mm-hmm. run through all the products and services that they offer. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. where's your, let's talk about sex toys. Mm-hmm. If you were to recommend introducing services or sex toys, Stephanie's zoning out here. She's getting
Adam, are we allowed to talk about this?
Where do you advise? Where do they start?
The tickler.
With what?
The tickler.
And where do you buy the products? The all body. Of that. Let's talk about sex toys.
Yes. So kind of two areas, I would say. You know, there's a store that I really love in, it's right outside of Boston. It's called Good Vibrations. So
been there.
Oh, yeah. That's a great
where
one.
Where is it? I have not.
Brookline?
You I have not.
there is one out in Western Mass, but that's a little far for people. But I like Good Vibrations because it's a very female friendly sex toy shop. So when you go in there, it sounds kind of silly, but everything's really nicely lit and the products are displayed nicely. And all the staff there are, I want to say they're all ASEX certified, which is, it's a long acronym, but the American Association of Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. So everyone there is really knowledgeable. They're going to be able to answer any questions you have. Again, very open with talking about sex. Also very normal for people coming in there to not be as comfortable talking about sex.
Do people come in disguise?
Some people come in like sunglasses. Some people have come in my office like sunglasses and a hat on. I'm like, no one's going to see
that. That's fabulous.
I was like, guys, I do have people that just come for general therapy too. It's not that you're talking about sex.
So when you send them to a store like mm-hmm. Good Vibrations, mm-hmm. where they're going to feel like they're in their favorite aisle at Target.
Yes.
What do you advise them?
Usually I'll say just kind of as a first time, go in, look around, see if anything catches your eye that might be interesting. You know, usually lubricants can be a really fun place for people to start. I feel like people don't use lube as much as they should. Is just a personal thing of mine. And that can be a really, I mean, you know, that can be a nice kind of slow entry into spicing up your intimate life which I will just put a little plug in for a silicone lube. It doesn't dry out as fast as water-based lube, which is a lot of what you get in, you know, if you go to Target or CVS, it can be really common to get water-based lube. So always look for silicone.
But so ladies, put a bottle of silicone lube on your husband's nightstand.
On the bedside table.
The bedside table.
There's some good ones. You can get like cherry flavored, grape flavored, you know, so the smell is nice. So I'll usually say start there and then, you know, just kind of take a look around and sort of see what tickles your fancy a little bit. Maybe not a foot tickler or anything, but, you know, kind of what catches your eye and, you know, sort of go from there.
And so when you're in a store like that, you're looking at a product and then the person will come over and help you just like you're at In Good Health, the marijuana store.
Yep.
The bud specialists, I think they're called.
I haven't been there.
I have. And they help you, guide you, because it's not something that you can talk about. And if you go online, it comes up a whole bunch of just porn websites. If you just want to explore and be curious about what products are offered, services, I don't know, services is one I think of the ladies the other day, but you can't look without seeing porn sites. And now then they track you, right? So every time you go online.
I want to see your cookies. What have you been looking at, Meredith?
Yeah, because now it'll come up constantly.
Right.
Yes. So I guess old school going in person is the best way to go.
Remember the old school sex toy parties?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah. They used what were they called?
Do they still do those?
They have them still. They have. I went to a couple when I was younger.
Yeah, me too.
I feel like it's like a thing you do when you first married.
Go to a sex toy party. Yeah, we did them a lot for like bachelorettes and a couple of my friends' bachelorettes. They were good though. That's where
Now we go to Botox parties.
Go to Botox parties. Oh, I wonder if they. I was gonna say I should talk to them. And be like,
so you should get sponsored by one of these companies.
I would love that. I wish I could.
That's a great idea.
When your website's set up and your Instagram, you start boosting on your Instagram. That's where you can get sponsored by one of these companies.
I should. You know what would be great? So one of the first sex toy party, this was when I was just starting to get into it, and the lady, I hope this is okay to say, tell me if it's not, but the lady had a bondage starter kit. So it was essentially ropes that went under your bed and they kind of tied up at the top and at the bottom. So if you pulled your arms, it would pull your legs. If you pulled your legs, it would pull your arms. And so she was like, does anyone want to demonstrate this? And of course I was like, yeah, sure, I'll try it out. So I did this. So that would be kind of funny. You could have like a Botox and bondage party or something.
Now, do people ask you to talk to their teenagers?
I tend not to see kids. I did that when I first was getting my license for therapy, worked for the Child Behavioral Health Initiative for Massachusetts. So I don't see kids as often, but I will give a lot of parenting advice about if your kid is exploring sex, here's what's normal. Here's how to talk to your kids about sex.
So tell us how to talk to your teenagers about sex.
Young teenagers. So one of the things I tell people is I hear a lot of parents say, oh, well, we had the talk with our kid. And, you know, one of the things that I stress is talking about sex should, in respectfully, in my opinion, kind of any serious topic, whether it's like drugs, alcohol, friends, grades, keeping the conversation going. So not just having one talk where it's, okay, here's how a penis works, here's how a vagina works, and don't have sex, you'll get pregnant and die. You know, don't leave it just at that. Have that open door, like, hey, when you have questions, come to me, ask me things, I would say trying not necessarily to go the scare tactic route. I know it's just sort of joking.
My father did that.
The scare tactic route, yeah.
We were hysterically crying, my sister and I. It was the most traumatizing event of my life.
Yeah. I had one person who said that they like pulled up pictures of STDs and like showed them made their children look at them. And I was like, don't do that. You want them to know about consequences, but you don't want to traumatize them.
Right.
So keeping the conversation open. And, you know, one really important thing is also telling your kids about correct terms. So a lot of people will, you know, especially with young children, they'll refer to it by like a nickname or something like that. And, you know, I would say it's just, you know, from an early age, it can be really helpful to just teach kids the correct terms for their bodies. That way, you know, they can kind of advocate for themselves and, you know, they're not starting off on the foot of like, this is something secretive or something that I have to be embarrassed about or shame or hide. So that's kind of.
I remember Alexa. We were like, we took her to the Museum of Science, and we took her through the exhibit of how to have a baby. And that was what we did.
Yeah.
And then when she was done, she was like, wow. And then she said, ew. That means Laurie and Larry did that, because my friend at the time was pregnant. Yeah. I had already had my kids. Mm-hmm. But that's what we did with her. And then we had brought my son a book, and Alexa took the book and she went through the whole book with Gregory. Done. And that was it. I didn't even have to do anything.
Done.
Yeah. Yeah, it's done. I'm like, oh, that was great. Yeah.
Well, it's tough approaching teenagers because they get embarrassed right. by absolutely everything. Mm-hmm. And you don't right. want them to feel uncomfortable, but you want right. them to be knowledgeable and yeah. feel comfortable with themselves.
Mm. Oh, mm-hmm. Like my father, like I said, it was horrible. Mm-hmm. Maybe my mother should have talked to my sister and I and not my father, who was screaming at us and made us cry.
But so, you know, I think when we were young, it was uncomfortable for women to talk about it.
Right.
Yeah. We weren't even working really when right. we were young. It was a new thing
right.
to be in the workforce, despite, you know, having them work, you know, for so long. But it was not something that was looked positively on if you were working outside the house.
I mean, I feel like my age, we had to learn everything on the streets.
Yes. Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't even think my mother told us about periods.
No.
Yeah.
No. Nothing.
Girl Scouts did for me.
Right.
And then school.
Yeah.
And
the
she
school
was like,
bus.
Whatever you need, it's in the closet.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I still have some people that are adults. Like I've had a few couples that come to me, they've waited until marriage, and then they come into couples counseling and they say, I didn't know this happened. I didn't know that this worked. Like, yeah. So that's, I mean, and I always tell parents that too with young teenagers, because I go, listen, you might not like it, but they're going to find out about it from somewhere. So do you want them hearing it from you, or do you want to hear it from, you know,
right.
a kid
and
who watches
a TikTok
video?
Why do we have to be so serious about it?
Yeah.
Right? Can mm-hmm. we add some humor and laughter to it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe we should talk about it more at the office.
I feel uncomfortable.
Joke about it. See, you find the edge of your comfort zone. And
that's
then
right.
You,
I like
you push
that.
It a little
find
bit.
That edge.
I'm not sure. Are we allowed to?
I think our manager wouldn't really care. She'd probably just walk out of the room. Yeah. We have a section where the agents are and we could talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
All right, I'll try.
Okay. We'll find that edge, like Brittany says.
Yeah.
Right? And talk about it.
I'm going to do it.
Do you guys see that in real estate? I feel like a lot of couples that are looking for houses, I don't know, that's been a thing in couples therapy, when you'll see their dynamic as they're going to purchase a new property.
You have to.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You have to actually observe that.
Yeah.
And understand it right out of the gate.
Mm-hmm. We are untrained therapists too.
Completely.
You know, there's a lot of emotions when you're buying a new house and mm-hmm. we have to deal with a lot of stuff.
Stress is probably the biggest one.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. People are under.
Right.
In fact, I had someone recently kind of their voice cracked. I think he got weepy through this was recently. So it's so much dealing. I'm sure that's what you see and you have to. So we had a death doula in recently. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And her comfort level with an equally
taboo conversation
was magnificent. And it just breaks down those barriers, just feeling, being in someone's presence who's comfortable with this taboo subject. Mm-hmm. It's pretty magnificent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can use that. I will say that's the one subject I always tell people, hey, with grief, I'll talk about sex all day long, but with grief, I really appreciate people who do that work because it's very difficult.
Yeah. But sex too. I mean, God.
Who made it so taboo?
I know.
Religion?
Yeah.
I know.
Religion did.
I know. I hate to blame it on that because I think it's a wonderful tool for a lot of people. But I'm like, I always joke. I'm like, wow, I've made, you know, made a lot of business off of reframing religious shame.
Yeah.
It's a big thing.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think with kind of removing that and peeling that back, I mean, there's so many layers that you can talk about.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
You know, with...
Mm-hmm. I'm going to be a new me.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
I'll be a new me.
Well, I see this for women a lot, too. I think it's interesting. One of the biggest things, you know, when I talk to women who struggle with kind of opening up or talking about sex, I always think it's interesting the messages that we... give to women in particular. You know, we say, oh, you know, be careful who you give your virginity to, right? You're giving away your virginity. And I'm like, well, why are you giving something away as opposed to getting something? You know, for me, I like to talk about it. People are probably going to think I'm crazy, but with my daughter, I'm going to be like, hey, pick the person that you want to, you know, get this wonderful, what should be a wonderful experience from. Like, you should be gaining something out of this experience. Like, it's not just something to give away for somebody else to have. And even that reframe I've used with a lot of my married women to say, you know, they come into their relationships thinking, you know, this is something I have to give my partner. I have to concentrate on my partner being happy, my partner being satisfied. I'm kind of like, well, what do you like in the bedroom? What do you, and a lot of people don't even really go there because the messages they've gotten when they're younger are, you know, this is something you have to protect. And once you give it away, it's gone and you get nothing.
That is magnificent. I mean, that's the showstopper. Right. That reframes everything right there.
Right.
Yeah. So ladies, go out and get what you want. Stop giving stuff away.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I like that. Well, that's it. I don't even know what else to say.
I don't know.
But reframing it, I think, is that's the truth. That's what it is. Mm. Especially women today, young women today.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very different world that my daughter is growing up in than I grew up in, and certainly for my mom, what she grew up in.
Yeah.
I don't want to go back to like women's lib. I hate that term. It almost sounds dirty to me. But for a time period where women felt liberated. And I think that exactly to your point, that still carries through with this sort of protective mechanism of something that once you give it away, it's gone forever.
Mm-hmm.
It's crap.
Right.
It's
it
crap.
Is such crap.
Yeah.
Because then you harbor that for the rest of your life of like, you know, these bad feelings about intimacy, which it shouldn't be.
My parents really screwed me up.
They totally did.
Don't worry. People are like, oh, I'm like, don't worry. You're going to screw your kids. I'm going to screw my kids up too. Everybody screws their kids up
in
some way.
We're all screwed up. It's fine.
Yeah, everybody screwed up.
I think about that all the time. What am I doing to screw up my kids?
I always think about that.
That's what we all think about.
I mean, but hopefully not. You want to give them independence, confidence, love themselves, love their bodies, love
who
they are.
We do the best we can. Right.
Do the best we can.
We try to teach them the best lessons we can.
Yeah. And my perspective on that might be different than theirs, and you know what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, so Brittany, tell us, how do people find you? Do you have room for therapy or do you not? How do they find you on Instagram, your website, all of that?
Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah. So you can reach out to me anytime at speakteasy.com. Like I said, I also have the Instagram, which is speakteasyma. And there, you know, I usually do like, I take questions if people want to DM me, or, you know, post, you know, if they have any topics they want to see me speak on. Always looking for new ideas and putting out new content there. In terms of my caseload, I will say this is always a question I get. I'm pretty full right now. I don't keep a wait list just because by the time I usually am able to take somebody on, it's, you know, a couple months, you know, years sometimes. But I am always taking on clients for the online seminars. So if anybody's interested in that, those are all on the website. speakteasy.com. And anybody can also contact me via Gmail. So speakteasyma@gmail.com.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
I think
guys
you made a new
me.
Woman over here for Stephanie.
That's right. Stay tuned.
Yeah, we'll get Alexa to talk to you
about
sex. We'll
have to have you come back on.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Will you be willing to come on?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. This was so much fun. I love this.
Yeah, it's perfect. Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks. Thanks, guys.
All right, guys. Thanks for joining us.
Bye.